I just want to acknowledge, first of all, the co-authors, Bruce Dean, Patricia Brian, there in the at Peoria with USDA ARS. They're a colleague that I've interacted with quite a bit. They do a lot of the conversion work that, by biochemical conversion at least, that I've done with, and Tim Strickland was with us in Tifton, Georgia, and Marshall Lamb in Dawson. There's some of the land that he had available that we did some of this work on. So I normally go through and do a little background here. What is Naprograss? Why, etc. Well, when I came on board with USDA back in 2003, bioenergy was just getting going as far as biomass, trying to determine what kind of biomass species we would want to use at various places. Heard a lot about switchgrass, of course, by then, and miscanthus by Giganteus, the giant miscanthus. Was quite a bit, and we had also a nursery in Tifton of Naprograss, Penicetum purpureum. And it had been used for forages. It's a very good forage throughout the world. Energy cane was also there, which was kind of an offshoot of the sugarcane breeding aspects. And so we decided to do some studies early on to compare some of these. And one of the things you can see here is the switchgrass and giant miscanthus down in southern Georgia. Usually flowers out around July, and so obviously the biomass kind of ceases at that point, vegetative at that point. So, but the Naprograss and energy canes, they continue to grow up until basically cold, until a freeze or frost. We did a initial study comparing Naprograss with energy cane switchgrass. You can see in this study we didn't put any inputs on, so you can see that the Napier and energy canes were a much higher yielder than switchgrass in the first 2 years. Then, but you notice that it takes 2 or 3 years for the nitrogen to deplete for a lot of these crops. So a lot of times you won't see a nitrogen effect in the first 2 or 3 years. Usually takes a little bit more. And so this is kind of an indication that the yields went way down because of the lack of fertile soils. So anyway, we continued on. We realized that Naprograss is one of the better biomass crops for us. So we've done a number of studies, managed Naprograss for higher production with lower inputs, and also wanted to look at best quality biomass for conversion to sugars and biofuels, and that would be quality, so the quality and quantity there. We've done some nutrient and water nutrient water effects for production, where we've got that still is going on. We're in the fourth, fifth year of that. Organic nutrient options, we've looked at that using poultry litter versus inorganic. And then timing of harvest, and that's basically what I'm going to show you today. So the objectives of this study were to look at the yield response of a two-harvest system versus an end-of-year harvest, and also look at the fertilizer application needs for the two-harvest system and compare these via biochemical conversion and efficiencies. So the methods, again, we normally when Naprograss is usually propagated similar to sugar cane or energy cane by just planting a cane in the fall. But what we usually do is to try to maintain a very uniform stand for comparisons. We start the cane in the greenhouse in the fall, and then we transplant individual plants into the field. And we usually planted 9 plants within a 10-meter row, and then 3 rows per plot where we harvested the middle row. The 2 outside were borders. We had 3 treatments, 1 harvest treatment in December only, where we fertilized in March. And we may use the 168 kilogram per hectare nitrogen, which we've seen is something that maintains the yields relatively well. And then we did a two treatments that were two harvests, June and December. One of them that we just fertilized once in March, and the other one we fertilized, we split the fertilization in the spring and then after harvest in June. We've done that, this study now, since 2011, and we haven't harvested the 2015 material yet. We did this in Shelman, and we actually were able to fertilize or irrigate this. So this part of another study where we got two different kinds of irrigation, or two levels of irrigation, but we went ahead and just made sure that we had good irrigation on this. We took samples, and we from there to get the dry matter yields, and also to look at NDF, neutral detergent fiber, acid detergent fiber, acid detergent lignin, and in vitro dry matter digestibility, which are normal things for a forage breeder, which I am. So we developed an NIRS calibration for those with Napier. And also in 2012 and 2014, we've taken samples and we sent them to Peoria for conversion analysis. In that analysis, Bruce Dean decided to use a low moisture ammonium pretreatment strategy. There's a lot of different pretreatments. If anybody knows anything about conversion and biochemical, you have to break apart the material so that the cellulose and hemicellulose can be used from the lignin. So it's basically trying to use various aspects, and the various different pretreatments have been tried. They decided on the low moisture ammonia pretreatment, tried anywhere between 10% and 30% weight by weight biomass and high solid moisture, and moderate temperatures, 80 to 120 C. And they tried different combinations to test whatever they came out with the highest percent glucose extracted. And they did a surface analysis and basically came up with something in the middle there at 83% glucose efficiency. They used this for continuing the analysis to test. All right, so first the dry matter yields. And you can see that the December-only harvest has maintained well over years, pretty much very consistent between 35 and 43 megagrams per hectare. And then the June harvest, the June plus December harvest, were okay the first 2 years, but depleted significantly the last 2 years. And that's not too surprising. It's a lot of studies have been found that, you know, the translocation and such, that it affects the harvest will affect whether or not, even though you have the adequate fertilizer, you have adequate moisture throughout the year, it's the yields will go down significantly. On the non-cell wall plant components, the main things, there were some differences in extractables and soluble sugars, and also in starch. You can see that here with the December harvest had much higher starch, which makes sense. That has a longer period of time to produce the starch before senescence. And then also ash. Ash in June, the harvest is ash content is much higher because the translocation hasn't taken effect, basically. All right, so comparison of theoretical ethanol yields here. In the 2012, basically if you looked at using the glucans and non-glucans and using theoretical yield, and I'm trying to remember the exact conversion, what they used, but I can't remember right now. But anyway, it looked, the Napier grass definitely is comparable to corn stover and switchgrass. And through the studies that Bruce has done, mainly on switchgrass and corn stover in the Midwest. Carbohydrates, now here we have a little comparison of, we just got the data back from the 2014 yield. And you can see in 2012, when the yields were comparable, that actually the double harvest gave a higher ethanol production. It's 10.2 versus 8.56, and that was significant. However, because in 2014 our yields were about cut in half, the ethanol yields went way down. But still, if you look at yield of corn ethanol and compare that, it's still comparable there. So that even though the yields are much lower, if there was a decision to try to harvest more than once a year, you would still come out with decent decent amounts of ethanol if that were the way to use it. So in conclusion, I'd say that we'd say the sustainability of one harvest system remains the best for napergrass. The biomass quality of the napergrass improves in multiple harvests for biochemical conversion. The effect of the yield outweighs the quality advantages. And that's pretty much, if you hear anybody talk about what you need to do for breeding for biomass crops, it is yield, yield, yield. And that's pretty much it. Even though the quality aspects are important. The ash content of the mid-year harvest would cause problems in the thermochemical conversion. And the ash content in Napier itself would also cause some problems. And we've talked to a number of people, so whenever you do a thermochemical, either pyrolysis or producing syngas, high ash content is a big negative. So, but anyway, that's what we have. I think that's it. Oh, yes, and acknowledgments, technicians Freddie Cheek and Tony Howell with me, and, of course, Patricia Neal is the technical expert with, and Patricia Slinginger, who supplied the yeast strain that they are using now up in Peoria. All right.
We do have time for questions.
I don't think it's nutrient depletion because we kept the fertilizer. We did the two fertilizer treatment, and the one cut was right there, the same place. It was one of the treatments, and it maintained its yield. So it's physiological. Yeah. The hard frost?
Yeah.
Oh, it dies, but it comes back the next year. Yeah. A lot of times we harvest, especially in December, it's brown. I mean, we're harvesting at the end of it. And napergrass has gotten a bad rap in some cases. There's a few publications out there about invasiveness, and John would know. That makes certain parts of Southern Florida, where there's no frost, it could be invasive. But anywhere where there's naturally a frost, the flowering is usually November, December. Usually there's not, and there's frost hits before there's any viable seed produced, etc.
I think it may depend on how hard it frosts and how many of you get too.
Yeah.
Because it'll start growing again in our region, and if it keeps getting frosted off, that'll slow it down.
We lose leaves for one thing, which that would maybe a good thing because actually leaves put nutrients back on the soil, but then your quality goes down as far as if you wanted to use it for say for forage, you'd want to get it green actually. And actually there is an apigrass that is developed for forage, and it's been tried in Florida. And not too many growers use it.
I have a question. Go ahead and go.
Yeah.
How far north would
This is about an hour north of the Florida-Georgia border. But Napier grass has been grown as far north as Athens, Georgia, and done well. It's out-yielded Joe Boughton. If you know him, he did a lot of breeding in switchgrass. And he did a study actually over 6 years in Athens, comparing the Napier grass with switchgrass, Alamos, the variety at that point, and it continued out yield. Until 1 year, it did die out. That was after 6 years. Yes, there is some place, we don't know where it is, where there's a cutoff between energy cane and Napier grass on the southern part, and switchgrass and giant miscanthus being more productive north. Yep.
I was wondering on your conversion step when you were getting similar yields in the first time, was that due to more, when you got better ethanol and yields from the two cuts, was that more soluble sugars? Is that better release of sugars because of lower lignin or something from the biomass or what?
Yeah, I cut a lot of the slides short just to make it quick, but there was higher glucans in the two cut system in both June and December, but especially in June.
Mm-hmm. It seems like that so the more frequent clipping basically you have less time and the leaves are closing size basically.
Right. The first 2 years, it was amazing. You couldn't even tell the difference, really, by height between the first and between the one cut and two cut. It came back very well in from June to the until frost. And but then these last 2 years, it's really declined, big time.